Well, strokes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. They can happen to anybody, anytime, at any age. You don't have to be old to have a stroke. And we're going to be talking about that today. I'm Larry Mueller, of course, and our guest today in the studio, Dr. Luke Bradbury. He's a vascular neurologist with the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. And Dr. Bradbury, thanks for coming by. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me again.
And Chris Welly is a master's trained registered nurse, one of the first nurses in Wisconsin to be certified in stroke care. And Chris Welly, thank you so much for coming back, too. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Well, you know, it always helps if I turn your microphone on. Now I've got it on. And thank you again. And I really appreciate having you here. And you may, as you listen to our guest talk today, think about this. You may have had a loved one suffer a stroke. Maybe you suffered one yourself. You have questions about it. Give us a call. Number's 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. UW just received a grant from the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. And maybe talk about that to begin with. Chris Welly, do you want to start with that?
Sure, sure. We received a grant for telemedicine equipment so that we can do outreach to other facilities. We have right now 7 different locations in Wisconsin where people can go to their local emergency department, mm-hmm. and if they're having stroke symptoms, the physician who's seeing them will call us and have us consult over the over a screen, like sort mm-hmm. of like FaceTime.
Yeah,
Dr. Bradbury actually will do that, so it'll be our vascular neurologist, so they can then have the high level of expertise available mm-hmm. in their community that we have here at the medical center.
Well, and that's, I guess, a reason why it's so important. This telemedicine could be really important to stroke care.
It's a huge advantage that we can have. You know, there aren't many stroke doctors out there, and so we sort of focus on the bigger hospitals like here at UW and some of the other, you know, bigger cities. But if you live in a rural area and you end up in the local emergency department, they may not have a stroke specialist or even a neurologist around who can actually mm-hmm. take a look at the patient, do an exam, and help make those real critical decisions in the early time after a stroke starts. And so what this allows me to do is log in and actually look at the patient, and they can see me too, which is, I think, a nice thing. They can actually see what I look like and my facial expressions as I'm, you know, doing an exam, and I can go over the risks and benefits of different treatments for them and help the local physicians make a quick decision about how to treat that stroke. And sometimes I can look at them too and say, oh, that's not a stroke, and so we can actually not worry about a vascular neurological problem. And that's a really helpful tool that we have. And so being able to expand this to more places is really important, and that's what we hope this grant will help us.
And before that, what happened is people always got transferred. Mm-hmm. And so now they can stay in their local community if we don't have something to offer. And if we do, and it'll be helpful, they can come.
That's got to be a huge advantage. And here we are. May is Stroke Awareness Month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So maybe talk about one of the what factors you consider when determining who is most likely to have a stroke.
So there's a lot of, you know, risk factors for stroke out there, and one of the biggest is hypertension. So high blood pressure and a history of that, particularly if it's not treated, is one of the bigger risk factors for stroke. The typical things that we know cause other health problems, high cholesterol, a history of smoking. But as we get older, our stroke risk goes up. And so that's an important thing to talk about, is to see a doctor on a regular basis, get your preventative medications started, and know that you're trying to treat the existing other risk factors for stroke is really good to prevent that stroke. And so that's one of the things with, you know, Stroke Awareness Month, to kind of get out there and talk about all of the causes and make sure that people see their doctors on a regular basis. Like
yeah. And if you, let's say, had a family member with a stroke, would you be necessarily more likely to have one yourself?
There are some causes of stroke that are, you know, kind of genetic, run in family, things like blood clotting disorders or sometimes, you know, genetic things that predispose people to have malformed blood vessels and things like that. But a lot of the stuff, the most common causes of stroke are not necessarily genetic. So an irregular heartbeat, for example, or again, that high blood pressure, you know, problem. Those are very common problems to have. You don't necessarily need it to run in the family. And so there are, you know, I think cases where, you know, things like, you know, like the high blood pressure, for example, that, you know, seems to run more in families that then strokes follow that. So
What I think is really important is to try and focus, too, on the things that you can change. So you can't really change your family history.
Right.
You know, you can change some things with medicine, but you can also adopt a healthy lifestyle and make sure that you eat healthy and get exercise every day. And those things have been shown to reduce your risk of stroke.
And And among women, it's like the fourth, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth leading killer of American women. Women suffer more strokes and more disabling strokes than men.
Yeah, we just had the American Heart Association had a Go Red for Women luncheon here in Madison where we talked about that exact thing and making it aware, you know, making more women aware that this is not a disease of men and that it's very, you know, important to, if you have stroke symptoms, to go to the emergency department right away because strokes affect everyone. And it is, as we all get older, but as women get older, too, you know, they're at a very high risk for a stroke.
So. I know for women, for example, with a heart attack, they're, the symptoms are different than they are for a man. But what about stroke? Are the symptoms similar for men and women?
They really are. The brain, you know, is supplied by basically four blood vessels, and really depending on where the stroke happens, symptoms I don't think are going to be very different from a man to a woman, or for young and old. That's the other important thing. If you're young, you can have very similar symptoms, and that's why we have this acronym, BFAST, is what we tell people with regards to stroke symptoms. So B standing for balance, E for eyes, you know, if you have trouble with either your balance or your vision changes, and then FAST with face drooping, A, arm weakness, speech difficulty with S, and that's both slurring your words or not being able to get the right words out, kind of language problems,
yeah.
And then T being time to call 911. So that means, you know, be as quick as you can and get to the emergency department by calling 911. So,
and that speed is a huge thing.
It's really important, and that's... And these changes come on suddenly. And what happens is in our society, a lot of things you say, well, let's see if you feel better tomorrow. That's why it's really important to know these symptoms, because in this case, you don't want to wait until tomorrow. And that happens a lot. And even with people, a lot of people have difficulty with their vision, and they'll have a sudden loss of vision in one eye, and they won't appreciate that that could be a stroke symptom. And then it goes away, and they think, well, maybe I even imagined that. But honestly, that's a medical emergency, and we would want you to go right away to the emergency department, because you are in a very high risk of having a stroke in the next 24 hours.
Jess in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
No problem. I'm just wondering if there's anything nutritionally speaking that we can do. And I'm not talking homeopathically and so on, but when you go to a doctor, they give you a prescription. They don't give you nutritional information how to, you know, reduce your high blood pressure or your stress or whatever it is. They'll try to give you a pill. And I'm asking if there's anything nutritionally. I had a pulmonary embolism, and as an example, and the worst thing I could have taken or would have taken, it would be vitamin K, because that's a vitamin that, you know, clots your blood. You don't want to do that when you're having a PE. So I'm just wondering if there's anything you can do to recognize something's coming on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of studies, you know, looking at different diets and how nutrition affects both, you know, strokes and other blood vessel health. And really the one that stands out is called the DASH diet. And that's the dietary approaches to stop hypertension. It's very similar to what is also called the Mediterranean diet, in case, you know, you're more familiar with that. But basically it's, a diet that's in, you know, low fat, healthier oils and lots of vegetables and things like that. And if you look on both the American Heart Association or other websites, look for the DASH diet, DASH, and that'll give some really good nutritional recommendations. And in the studies for stroke and heart attack, it actually does show to reduce the risk of either your first or second stroke going forward. But actually, the DASH diet was originally sort of come about to approach hypertension, as it says in the name. And so, you know, if blood pressure is a problem, that is an excellent diet to get on and to really stick to be able to lower your blood pressure without medicines. I love being able to tell people that they can stop medicines if their blood pressure gets better and they've made the lifestyle changes that can help do that. And so nutrition is very important.
The one of the things that people can do that's easy to remember is to try to eat more food that looks like food. So if it's highly processed, it probably has a lot of sodium in it, which will cause you to have high blood pressure. And
good points. Good points. Mary Beth, thanks for calling from Appleton. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to stress that strokes do happen at any age. Our son was 7 when he had a stroke, and thankfully the doctors at Children's in Milwaukee knew what was wrong with them and were able to help us, but they happen at any age, so knowing the signs are really, really important, because that's how we knew something was wrong.
Thank you so much for calling. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, it's absolutely true to remember that strokes can happen at any age, from 0 to 105 and beyond. And it's important to know all of the risk factors. In children, though, we talked earlier about the stroke signs and symptoms, and to be aware of those. They can look a little bit different in children as the brain is developing, as the nervous system is changing. So it's always important, if you're worried at all, to go and get checked out in the emergency department. And there was a study a couple of months ago that came out in Southern California, where they did a big survey of people and asked about stroke symptoms and whether or not they would go to the emergency department if they experienced them. And actually 75% of people under the age of 45 said they would probably stay at home and wait it out, not thinking that they were having a stroke or just not thinking that stroke was something that could happen to them. And so that's really important. This is, again, why with Stroke Awareness Month, why we get out to know that not only children, but teenagers, young adults, and people under the age of 45, especially if you have stroke signs or symptoms, to go to the emergency department right away. And I'm really glad that Children's Hospital in Milwaukee was able to help you out.
That was, in fact, our son's second stroke. The first one we didn't recognize was a stroke. So you're right. They do present differently in children.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad you were able to get that help, Mary Beth. I appreciate it very much, your call today. We're visiting with Dr. Luke Bradbury, a vascular surgeon with UW Hospitals and Clinics, and Chris Welly, a master's-trained registered nurse, one of the first nurses in Wisconsin to be certified in stroke care. They'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be right back. Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at strokes and stroke awareness today with our two guests, Dr. Luke Bradbury, vascular neurologist with the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Chris Welly, master's trained registered nurse, one of the first nurses in Wisconsin to be certified in stroke care. Great to have them along. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Questions about stroke, email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. There are some events to come that are coming up I want to talk about, but maybe first, we had some listeners call and ask to have us repeat the stroke symptoms again, and I think because they're so important, Dr. Bradbury, that we should do that.
Absolutely. So the acronym we use is BFAST, B-E-F-A-S-T. So B stands for balance. So if you have the sudden onset of difficulty with balance, your walking is off, you can't coordinate your movements as well. E stands for eyes. If you have vision changes, that can be double vision or blind spots suddenly in your eye, or you lose vision in one eye. F stands for face. So if you have facial droop, weakness on one side of your face or the other. A stands for arm. So if you have arm weakness, and this is usually just one side or the other, if you suddenly have weakness in your arm, it feels heavier, you can't lift it up. S stands for speech. So your speech is slurred. You can't make the words come out properly. Or language issues kind of fall into that category as well. You know what you want to say, but you can't get the right words out. Or suddenly what everyone is saying to you sounds like a different language is another way that some people experience that. And then T stands for time. So that's very quickly to call 911 and get to the emergency department right away. So
those are the—and we'll— I think we'll be posting them. Actually, do we have those on the T-shirt? Mm-hmm. I think they're out. Yes. I took, actually, I I took a photo of a T-shirt. It should pop up here pretty quick. And Chris Willie, we had this bright yellow T-shirts with the and it's got the stroke signs.
Yeah. Yep. For Stroke Awareness Month, we have some T-shirts that people are wearing around to try and spread the symptoms of stroke. They have the FAST acronym, which a lot of people are familiar with because the American Heart Association uses that, and we just add the B on there to catch brainstem symptoms. There's lots of symptoms, and you'll see things come around in emails, like have somebody stick out their tongue and see if it... You know, and maybe they're having a stroke. But honestly, if you suspect a stroke, if someone has some sudden change that suggests stroke to you, I think the best thing to do is to call 911 rather than go through assessing all the particulars.
Yeah, yeah.
I had someone, a friend who he had was having a stroke and drove himself to the hospital. That's probably not the best idea.
Unusual.
That happens, and we always say, you know, the emergency medical services, I know especially, you know, here in the surrounding Madison areas are very good, but all over the state, we do outreach with them, too, to recognize stroke signs and symptoms. And sometimes a stroke can start as relatively minor symptoms that then acutely worsen. They get much worse, and you don't want to be driving your car when that happens. The excellent EMTs, paramedics out there know how to stabilize a patient, keep them going until they can get to the emergency department. And so it's very important to call 911. And then also what they do is they call ahead. So they let the emergency department know, I have a patient who has stroke symptoms. I'm on my way. And what the emergency department can do is get ready. And so they get the scanner ready. They get their medicines ready. They have all the experts aware of what's going on. And that way things happen much more quickly than if you just show up right at the door. So.
The other thing that happens is people who have had strokes, they try to drive themselves and they get into a car accident. And so then when they come to the emergency department, they're treated as a trauma and not a stroke. And so it takes a while to figure out that they actually had a stroke and that's why they crashed their car.
There's a stroke camp that I think is pretty cool. Would you talk about that?
Oh, I would love to talk about that. So we have here in Wisconsin a couple of stroke camps and we've had them now. This will be our fourth year that the UW-sponsored stroke camp will be in existence, and it's a weekend away with pampering and fun and food, and really there are scholarships for people who can't afford it, but it's very reasonable, some people who have attended it call it life-changing. People want to come back again and again. It'll be the 9th through the 11th of September this year in the Dells, and I'm really looking forward to it.
At a really minimal cost.
Oh, it's, I think, let's see.
$125 is what I have in front of me.
Yep.
For a whole week.
Right. Food, everything. Games, yeah, fun.
How do people look into that?
You go to strokecamp.org website, and that'll tell you about the ones all over the nation. And they've even had cruises, but you go to the Wisconsin site and you'll see it there. And there are a limited number of spots available, so I encourage people, if they're interested, to please go and sign up now.
I think we have it up on our Facebook page. Jello, we got that up? Oh, she's talking to somebody, so she can't hear me. She's busy with something else, but we'll get that. I'm pretty sure we have it up on our Facebook page. If not, we'll get it up very shortly. Jim in Evansville has something for us. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about atrial fibrillation. I had a mini maze operation about 6 years ago, and then I had an ablation maybe 3 years ago. And then I went into more like a flutter, but I wasn't in AFib. Well, now I'm back in AFib, and I'm wondering about the new blood thinners they have out.
That's a good question. So these new blood thinners, which you'll see commercials for all the time, are the brand names are Pradaxa, Xarelto, and Eliquis, and they have, for a lot of patients with atrial fibrillation, replaced the old standby warfarin, developed here in Wisconsin, actually, and but also went by the brand name Coumadin. And so these three new blood thinners are very good at preventing strokes in people with atrial fibrillation, but do come with the bleeding risk that you would remember with warfarin. And there's a lot of, you know, details about these medications, about, you know, their exact bleeding risk, but they're very good at preventing strokes. folks. It's important to work with your primary care doctor, your cardiologist, your neurologist, to figure out what might be the best medication for you. The advantages of these medicines is that they don't need the monitoring, the blood draws like warfarin does. There's much fewer dietary restrictions. They interfere with fewer medications. And they seem to have maybe a lower bleeding risk in some of the analysis. But one of the big barriers to these new medications is cost. They're new medications. They're only brand name. And so some patients, depending on what insurance you have, if any, you know, can be very hard to afford those new medications. And so warfarin is still out there and is still a very good medication to be on for stroke prevention and atrial fibrillation. So it's important, you know, to kind of go over all the details of your particular situation, what other medicines you're taking, what other diseases you have, and your doctor can help you pick the right medication. But these are getting more popular now, and they are doing a very good job at stroke prevention in people with atrial fibrillation. So.
Jim, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. We had Terry and Krivitz wondered if there's a correlation between migraines and strokes.
People with migraines do have a higher incidence of stroke, and there are what we call migrainous strokes, you know, small strokes that can happen, which seem to be associated with the changes that happen with migraine headaches. And so, there are, you know, also people with migraine headaches who have what we call focal neurological deficits with their migraines or complicated migraines. Maybe they'll get weakness or vision changes with their migraine headache that isn't a stroke. And so it's important that no matter what other problem you have, whether it's migraines or any other disease, if you have symptoms that are worrisome for a stroke, to go checked out. But yeah, there is an increased risk of strokes in people with chronic migraines. And so it's important to know that and to make sure your doctor is aware of your migraines and you have you on the right prevention medications for a stroke too.
And especially in women.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And especially in women. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we have other callers online. David and Slinger, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I was just at a restaurant, and I looked over, and there was an older gentleman kind of sitting there looking a little dazed and confused, and the receptionist had gone over to him, and she asked him to take a look at him, and he's a retired doctor, and said he had diplopia. And he could not look to the left. More importantly, he was, his mental status was not so hot. He was just sitting there quietly. He's normally a fairly gregarious kind of guy. And the receptionist said that one of the problems she has is a lot of times family members will not allow her to call an ambulance. Unfortunately, this guy's wife did, but that seems odd to me that if somebody is clearly not with it, that they can't call an ambulance because someone tells them not to.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Yeah, David, thank you for calling.
You know, calling an ambulance is, you know, we get out and when this is our message, call 911 right away because we have these excellent EMTs. I think there are people, though, you know, given the cost that can be associated with an ambulance ride to the hospital and the worry that they're bothering people unnecessarily, you know, who may not want to call an ambulance right away, or maybe they've had some bad experience in the past. And that's something we have to kind of work on overcoming, you know, and recognizing that sometimes people hesitate and they may not want to call 911 and have that ambulance come pick them up. But it is so important, and that's a good message for bystanders like yours who are watching, but also for family members who maybe have an ill person either in the house or with them, to just go ahead and call. And I know that there are some barriers that can happen with regards to cost and other things, but that's the safest, most effective way to get treated quickly. So.
The other thing that's important is to remember is a person who's having the stroke is not – that stroke is affecting their brain. So they are not making good decisions
right.
A lot of times. So you don't want to rely on their decision. So we used to say you're your brother's keeper when it comes to stroke.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Well, we had Daniel on Facebook. He was diagnosed with AFib at, he's 52, scheduled for ablation surgery June 6th. What he wonders about the procedure and the stroke risks linked to atrial fibrillation.
Mm-hmm. So atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is what we kind of abbreviate it down to for ease. There's the most common cause of stroke in America right now, and it's especially common as we get older because this is an irregular heart rhythm that many people develop as they get older. And so the cardiologists, who are the experts in treating that with things like ablation surgery, where they try and essentially affect the electrical system in the heart so that this irregular rhythm doesn't happen anymore, are really the experts on that and are very good at treating that. If there is AFib, though, the idea with the ablation surgery is that it resolves AFib and then there's just a normal heart rhythm from then on. But if AFib comes back and if you have persistent AFib where it keeps going in the atrial fibrillation rhythm, or if it comes and goes, or paroxysmal AFib, it's really important to get on the medicines for stroke prevention, because what happens is during that irregular rhythm, a blood clot can form in the heart and then get ejected and go to the brain, and that's what causes the stroke symptoms. And so to prevent that from happening, we need the blood thinned out so that that clot can't form in the first place. It's always easier to prevent a stroke, or it's always better to prevent a stroke than it is to treat it after it happens. And so working, again, with your primary care doctor and your cardiologist to make sure that if you have that irregular rhythm, even after the ablation surgery or procedure, that it is treated with those blood thinners if it's appropriate, you know, in that setting. So
there we go. Betsy in River Falls, your turn. Hi.
Hi. You were talking about why some people don't want an ambulance called. I'm a hospice volunteer, and many people have a do not resuscitate order in their medical file. And if an ambulance comes, the EMTs have to resuscitate. And so then you've negated the do not resuscitate order. So that might be one of the reasons why people don't want an ambulance called.
Mm.
Thanks for sharing that. I think that it's true that some people have that, but we're talking more about younger people, I think.
Yeah.
People who don't have that order. But that's a good point. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Margaret in Elgin, Illinois, up next. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Larry. My question is, I had a TIA 6 weeks ago, and no doctors told me what the recovery process was like or how long it would take. So you kind of feel like you're walking on a tightrope. I finally had a chiropractor tell me anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months. And so I was unprepared for the lack of energy and the residual weakness and shortness of breath. I'm now on blood pressure meds, which I never had to take before, and that's helping some, but could they talk about what can you expect in recovery time?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a good question. And to sort of explain TIAs versus stroke is important too. So TIA stands for a transient ischemic attack. And what that means is that for a brief period of time, there's an interruption of blood flow to a part of the brain that is then restored, and then the blood flows again and the brain recovers. And by definition, from a stroke standpoint, there's no damage done to the brain. And so if we do a scan and look at the brain carefully with either an MRI or a CT, we don't see any damage done. And usually, by definition, if someone has a TIA, they're actually completely back to normal clinically. And so they don't have any ongoing neurological deficits. We think of those as sort of a warning sign for a stroke. A stroke is when there is permanent brain damage done because of a lack of blood flow or sometimes bleeding. And because of that, it's a very different category. But the TIAs may, sort of be, again, a warning sign for the stroke. We need to look at the risk factors and reduce them. And so I'm not sure exactly, Margaret, how they came to the diagnosis. Obviously I'm not familiar with the details of your case, but usually if patients have had a TIA, they should be back to normal fairly quickly after their symptoms start. Now, people who have even small strokes can have ongoing symptoms that last and need sometimes rehabilitation with physical and occupational therapy. We usually say across the board, we see most of the improvement happen quickly over 6 months, although if it's a small stroke, it may be much quicker than that. And if it's a very big stroke, it can take longer than that. It really depends on how much of the brain and where in the brain the stroke is. So it's always hard to say, and that's why it's difficult for me to give any patient a prognosis. I would say, look, every patient has their own stroke, and they need to we need to work with them and give them every chance possible to recover and whatever therapies are necessary. It can take days, weeks, or months, really, depending on that exact situation. So,
You might want to see your physician, too, mm-hmm. about your shortness of breath, because that is not a usual sign, anything related to a stroke.
Fatigue often can be after a stroke, though, so feeling tired and kind of run down. And it's important to make sure that, you know, some of the medicines that are started after a stroke do have side effects. And it's not uncommon that we start a medicine and we say, well, you know, this is helping prevent a stroke, but it may also be causing some side effects. We need to change, find something different, or adjust the dose as time goes on. It's not uncommon at all to have to do that.
So good tip to go back and explain your symptoms, and maybe some adjustments can be made, Margaret. So I hope you'll do that. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Todd in Madison called to ask about vascular dementia, and not sure why it's different than other dementias.
So when we talk about dementia, the most common in America is Alzheimer's type dementia. And that, again, as you get older, the risk goes up. Vascular dementia is a different kind of dementia in that it seems to be related more to disease of small blood vessels. So this isn't – a lot of people with vascular dementia do have strokes because their blood vessels have damage and they're not very healthy and they can cause strokes that way. But vascular dementia is related more towards the blood flow to the brain. And the course is often different with vascular dementia. Sometimes people will have some mild memory problems that acutely worsen and then are stable for a while and then worsen again and are stable for a while, this sort of stepwise decrease in cognition versus Alzheimer's type dementia, which is a more gradual decrease in thinking. And then there's other types of dementia, frontotemporal dementia, for example, with different clinical things. And what all the difference between a lot of the dementias is basically what part of the brain is affected and what's causing that to have the problem. Mm-hmm. And in vascular dementia, it's a blood flow issue with the small blood vessels, affecting the brain.
Very, very interesting. We have a few minutes. Yeah, we have a few minutes to go here, and I wanted to go back to Chris for a minute because my daughter's a big Brewers fan, and there's a strikeout stroke event coming in June that I think is really cool and will be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yes, the Brewers are allowing us to have some special tickets available for strikeout strokes. So if you go to their website, you should be able to find those. The Loge tickets are deeply discounted. The money goes to Stroke Camp, which, by the way, is not a camp in the real sense. You stay in a hotel. I just wanted to make sure I made that part clear. But and it's a great opportunity to get the signs and symptoms out. So go to the Brewers site and look for those Loge seats. I went last year, and those are great seats. It was a really fun time. There's all kinds of great stuff happening at the Brewers Park. We also have a Fresh Start Recovery a group that meets once a month, roughly, and they'll be meeting on May 19th at the Edgewood College Deming Way campus, so from 6:30 to 8. And you can certainly call or check our website at the UW for the time and date of that, too. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, and the event, the Brewers event. Did you mention June 25th? I think you did, but
yes, June 25th is Saturday. It's going to be an afternoon game, so it's a great opportunity
with the Washington Nationals. And Emily and I will be there. As a matter of fact, we'll be at that game. So that would be something really, really cool to do. You know what? We've got about a minute to go. Why don't we go back once more and do the signs of the stroke?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So B, fast, balance, eyes, vision changes, double vision, things like that. F, for face drooping, if you have weakness in your face. A, arm weakness. S, speech changes or language issues where you can't get the right words out. And then T, time, call 911 right away. And then, like Chris was saying earlier, if you think there's something wrong, if you have neurological symptoms, go get it checked out. There are strange stroke symptoms and syndromes that we see from time to time. And so if you're at all worried, go get checked out. And I'd love to go to the emergency department and tell people they haven't had a stroke. So don't worry about that. Just come on in. Let's see you.
Stroke strikes suddenly. So a sudden change in that's a good clue.
It's a good clue that it's going to happen. And the best advice is to get yourself there. Get an ambulance is the better thing if you can. Get an ambulance and get there as fast as you can. Well, Dr. Bradbury, Chris Welly, thank you so much. It's been great to have you here, and we'll do it again. And I'll wear my T-shirt proudly.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks a lot.
In fact, I'm thinking about wearing that to the game.
You should.
On June 25th.
Absolutely.
All right.
We'll do it. Dr. Luke Bradbury is a vascular neurologist with UW Hospitals and Clinics. Chris Welly, master's trained registered nurse at the University of Wisconsin as well, Hospitals and Clinics. Great to have them here. And remember those signs, will you? Tomorrow, our bug expert is going to be with us to talk about butterflies, mosquitoes, and other summer insects. Hope you can join us at 11 tomorrow. In the meantime, hey, there's lots more in store this afternoon. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.